Radio International is a Canadian-based not-for-profit organization working in direct partnership with more than 1,000 radio broadcasters in 37 African countries to fight poverty and food insecurity. So I'm really I'm pleased to take this whole discussion at the international level with you now, Ian. Welcome.
Awesome. Thanks. Great to be here.
All right, so Ian, perhaps you can explain to us briefly the whole concept of farm radio. It's quite different. It's different than campus community radio, and I think people don't always quite grasp the enormity of what farm radio does.
Well, I guess the first thing is that farm radio is not a radio station. But it's similar to campus and community stations in the sense that we work with a whole range of radio stations, primarily in sub-Saharan Africa, and our role is to build the capacity of those stations to be able to offer better quality services to their listeners. So those would be rural folk in sub-Saharan Africa, primarily farmers. Our name says a lot, but obviously farmers have more concerns than just their livelihoods. Health, also really important, and so that's the focus of the work we do.
It's quite a unique idea, I guess, that you're able to help the rural communities communicate with each other and to learn, right?
Yep.
So you've got so not only agriculture but also health and education, perhaps.
Yep. Yep, yep. Anything to do really with the development of a community, we will be there ready to support radio stations as to how they can do a better job of serving their constituents. Mm. And that's really our focus as an organization. So the type of programming that we help stations to put on is maybe not what you would typically tune into if you turned on your radio here. Our programs tend to have more of an educational element in the sense that there are very practical results that we're looking for to come out of the programming that we do. So those could be increasing people's knowledge about particular agricultural practices or health practices, things that will benefit themselves and their families in terms of their income or their safety, their security, their health overall. So It's a little bit different in the sense that the programs have to be very carefully designed in order to be able to achieve those kind of results. So really, it's a lot about informal or adult education is the work that we're doing.
That's fascinating. And is there a lack of internet, or why radio and not something else?
If you're trying to do development work, as a catch-all phrase, in sub-Saharan Africa or in many parts of the world, the developing world, and you're not using radio, then you're not really meeting people where they are. So not only is there a lack of internet or a lack of mobile phones or a lack of television, newspapers, other forms of media, the base reality is often that there's no electricity. So if you don't have electricity, you're not going to have movie theaters, you're not going to have a lot of people with television. Essentially meaning that if you really want to reach people and you want to offer them good information and communication services, you really have two or three choices, and radio is always going to be very, very high up there. So if you're not using radio, you're really not talking to people in the way that they're ready to talk to you and to listen.
And how many of these stations then exist?
So right now, Farm Radio International, we work with around 1,350 stations that are part of our network. So the network is a very important part of our work. It dates back more than 40 years to the founding of the organization. And that's a big network. It's really unique about Farm Radio International that we have over the years developed this big network, over 1,350 radio stations in 38 different countries, which is 85% of sub-Saharan Africa. Mm-hmm. So the coverage within sub-Saharan Africa of all of our network members is huge. It's in the hundreds of millions of people. So the potential, as you increase the capacity of those stations to be able to offer quality programming that has a tangible benefit for people, it's huge. There's no other more cost-effective way than you could possibly serve those folks in rural areas.
And only in Africa you're working?
Right now, I mean, Farm Radio's original remit was sort of, you know, farmers everywhere, and it comes from a tradition of Canadian, farm radio. That's partly where the idea comes from. But at the moment, our focus is sub-Saharan Africa. It has been for maybe the last 15 years or so as an organizational strategy. But that probably will change in the coming years, where we start to maybe look a little bit more internationally and working with partners and networks of stations in different regions. So stay tuned. Change on the horizon for us, too.
Okay, yeah. That is exciting. So, Ian, I know that you travel to Africa, and you do go and visit some of these stations, help them get set up, I presume, or you get to speak with them and talk to them. Have you? Can you share any success stories with us, or any exciting, you know, what satisfaction do you get from your work when you go out there? You must be hearing some great stories.
Yeah, we hear fantastic stories. I always say that, you know, that my favorite thing to do is to go and visit the radio stations, although I've realized that even more than that, going and visiting the community listening groups that are listening to those radio stations is, you know, kind of even more powerful, because it's where people are really listening. But I went a few years ago to Kano in northern Nigeria, to visit a station that was running a program for us, and the project was about reducing post-harvest losses in key crops, which doesn't sound very exciting, but it's really important. And so this particular program was about reducing post-harvest losses in the tomato crop, because the tomato crop is one of the big cash crops in that area. And the station is a super powerful station. It's not a community station. This is a private broadcaster, beautiful building, a few floors. There's a TV station in there, multiple radio services, really big. Smart. I mean, they broadcast in the local language, and so they're smart around how to tap into being a popular station. But what was interesting is that when I said to them, well, what's been different about working with Farm Radio International rather than the usual work that you do? And what they said was, we never realized that farmers would tune into a program at 8:30 at night. Yeah. And it doesn't seem like a very big deal, but the fact that we were able to help them to tailor a program to exactly the right audience, that they would listen at exactly the right time, just goes to show you that even this station wasn't really listening to their own listeners around what do you want and when do you want it. And it's something that Farm Radio is very good at. If you really want to make a difference in people's lives, the first thing you have to do is to listen to them around where are you at with this particular issue, and when would you like to listen, and how would you like to listen? And if you can get those things right, even a program about reducing post-harvest losses in tomato will be one of the most popular programs on one of the most popular radio stations in northern Nigeria.
Wow.
So it was a real revelation, and I think gets to the heart of what Farm Radio International is really good at.
It sounds like all radio could learn a lesson from that.
I think so. I think so.
Ian, have you had a past experience at community radio? Have you volunteered in community radio?
It's fantastic to be here, because this is exactly where I came from.
Okay.
I started volunteering and working for CKUT in Montreal many, many years ago, before it even went on air.
Okay.
So it is awesome to be here and to connect to this great movement in Canada. And I love the slides and seeing some of the photographs. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Great. Well, we're so glad that you could be here. Is climate change having a big effect on what's going on in Africa? And is there more of a need for
it's
radio?
Huge. Yeah, it's huge. I mean, again, radio is the way. If you want to be able to increase people's, you know, knowledge, you want to be able to have them to be able to take actions and make changes in their own lives, you have to have access to information and communication. It's essential for any of us to be able to do anything. We largely take it for granted. You know, everybody in the room has got one of these.
Yeah.
And with one of these, in English or in French probably, you have access to most of the world's knowledge right here in your telephone.
Right.
But in a rural area of many, many, many countries around the world, you would be lucky if you have one radio program meant for you in your local language.
Wow.
So climate change, it's it's an existential crisis, as we all know. But, you know, many people in rural sub-Saharan Africa, they're on the front lines.
Thank you so much for being with us, Ian Pringle. Where can we get more information about Farm Radio?
Online, farmradio.org.
Farmradio.org. Ian Pringle, everyone, thank you so much for being with us today.
Super big pleasure. Thank you.
This is a Black History Month moment.
I'd like to get started by talking about the fact that you've built a professional career around translating and storytelling. Can you tell us about how that passion was sparked?
Yeah, well, happy World Radio Day.
Happy World Radio Day.
To everybody and to all of our friends at CKCU. And thank you very much for inviting me to share my passion for radio. Actually, I originally wanted to be in broadcasting, but my parents just said no. They said no. They were like, no, you're not doing that. In Africa, female journalists, that doesn't work too well. You're good at languages, you're going to be a translator. And I just said, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. So that's how I became a translator. It's not that it was a particular passion of mine. But while I was doing my master's over in France, we had a project where we had to produce radio segments that would be used as teaching tools for our students studying French. So in doing that work as part of my master's program over in Besançon, in eastern France, that's where really the radio bug bit me. And I realized that, well, A, I have a voice for it, and I'm good at putting together stories that are compelling enough for people to stay tuned for at least 5 minutes. So, yeah, but never look back.
Sorry, and you mentioned your parents didn't approve of your love for media. Did that ever change when they sort of saw your passion, how you were so devoted to it?
No. No, no, no. Like typical African parents, they were like, nah. You're a lawyer, a doctor. My dad was a diplomat, so a UN interpreter was what they had in mind, ultimately. No, whenever I tell them about, oh, look, I got a Lifetime Achievement Award for, you know, the volunteer work that I do with the radio station and TV station, and my mom's like, oh, that's great, dear. You know, like, not that impressed. But you know what? It doesn't matter.
Well, and we're impressed. And we
because
see
I see the impact
for sure
that my work and the work of my teammates on Black on Black has on our community. So that's all I care about.
I want to talk about, it's Black History Month. And I know you're a champion of Black History Month. And you do a lot of work sort of educating people. You work with Black History Ottawa, and I know that was created out of the lack of representation across the board. Mm-hmm. I want to know how that's changed since the organization launched, and what else needs to be done to further that mission.
Yeah, and it's interesting you should mention Black History Ottawa, because the creator of the show that I co-host and co-produce, Black on Black, Jackie Stewart, I need to shout out Jackie Stewart, she was with Black History Ottawa, and that show is kind of an offshoot of her involvement, because it was a way to showcase what was going on during Black History Month in the community. Well, Black History Month has been celebrated nationally since 1996.
Okay.
So that's quite a while. And since then, the Government of Canada has invested in awareness campaigns that have enabled different organizations to get the resources to do more impactful programming in terms of producing online resources, physical resources, posters and stuff. And the fact that media as well has jumped on board to help spread the awareness, has helped popularize and quote-unquote normalize Black History Month on this side of the border. So I'm very happy to see that, you know, it's gained popularity, visibility, It also helps that we have more black media personalities who have been, you know, out there spreading the word about Black History Month, black excellence, black contributions to Canada. There's still a lot to be done. It's only recently, I think it was last week, in Ontario, they said that black history will be mandatory as part of the curriculum. Wow. That was last week.
Wow.
Canada is how old? Canada is almost 200 years old. And it's last week that they decided that black contributions that date all the way back, I don't know, 400 years ago, are worthy of being represented in our history books at in schools. It's very important to make sure that all the different communities, not just the black community, the indigenous communities, the Asian communities, are included in telling the story of Canada. You cannot tell the story of Canada and decide that one particular group should dominate the narrative and that other communities, when they show up in the narrative, are marginal, and it's usually negative. It's never in a contributory way. It's never about how they helped, you know, develop physically or economically or socially the country. So this work is important, and it needs to continue.
Agreed, agreed. And continue beyond February.
Well, Black History Ottawa is 365, you know. It's all year throughout. And it's not just about history. It's about youth contributions right now. It's about technology. It's about entrepreneurship. You know, it's about community building, and that's 365.
Great. I just want to acknowledge that you were presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award by Volunteer Ottawa for volunteering and being an iconic community leader. To me, this is an example of black excellence, but could you maybe share with me what black excellence means to you and some examples?
That's hilarious when people say I'm iconic. I don't think I'm iconic. I mean, you know, I'm just regular. I just get up and do what I do.
You're humble.
No, it's, you know, and when you feel like you have a mission in this life and you've decided to use your access, your gifts, your voice, your abilities to uplift and, you know, highlight other people who otherwise wouldn't be highlighted and uplifted, then, you know, you're not going to think about yourself that way. Black excellence, oh my gosh, black excellence is all around us. We shouldn't just be looking for it in February, right? Black excellence, actually, the black presence at all is black excellence. Mm. Anywhere. Because you know about all of the challenges and the trials and tribulations that we face just to even survive. So you get past surviving, and then you go somewhere, and then you excel. You put in place new processes, you advance human rights. You know, a lot of the social justice movements here in Canada, you're going to find some black people that have been driving that out of necessity, usually. They don't get the spotlight that they should, but usually, yes. Women's rights movement here in in Canada. You know, Rosemary Brown is not the only black feminist who helped advance women's rights here. Black excellence is everywhere. It's just people need to look at the achievement, look beyond the skin color, and appreciate the contribution and really educate themselves. But hey, I mean, if it's a black person who did it and you can't look past the color and you marvel, great. As long as you appreciate the contribution, right?
Speaking of contributions, you're one of the hosts of Black on Black, which can be heard on CHUO FM in Ottawa. Can you speak about the radio program for those who may not be familiar with it? And also congrats on almost over 30 years of having the show.
Yeah, because Black on Black has been in existence since the very early 90s, right? Black on Black is a public affairs arts program that focuses on Black diaspora communities. We focus as locally as possible. However, we often have African Americans who call in to do segments on, you know, particular issues. When we had the Black Lives Matter movement come across the border, we had Americans, you know, who are calling in to comment. We've had Black people from the UK call in and tell us about their realities there. The idea of Black on Black really is to create the safe space for Black voices and Black experiences to be highlighted and celebrated, and for the people who usually are the subject of the story to tell their story. Families of murder victims. Remember when we had all the shootings? There was a parent who contacted us who wanted to speak to the community on our show. Wow. Because that is where he felt the safest, you know? We've had the police on. We also try to educate our Black community about what's available to them through the city, through the government, different programs that can help them, their kids, our youth. Increasingly, we're providing a space for our Black youth to express themselves, not just their creativity, but also, you know, their concerns, their hopes, their fears, and just to let the community know what our young people are doing, because there is a perception that they're up to no good. What are they doing anyway? They're hanging out in the mall, etc., etc. If you tune into Black on Black on a Saturday and Adrienne Caudette is hosting the show, she has some young people on there, you will marvel at just the many, many, many positive things that they are doing, not just in the school community, but in the wider community.
Thank you for that, yes. I just want to touch on the fact that your career in community radio, it spans nearly 28 years. Why is community radio important to you, and what keeps you driven after nearly three decades?
Oh, my. Oh, community radio is my love. Oh, my goodness. To me, it's the closest you're going to get to the community. It really, really, really is. And since you don't have the commercial imperatives and, you know, you can sort of create your own niche on community radio in a way you can't do it on mainstream or commercial radio, right? I love the grassroots feel of it. And community radio usually is an extension of community work, community development work. All of the hosts on Black are involved in the community, all of us. And you can hear it when we're on the air. Yeah. Community radio is the best. And I'm not just saying that because you're CKCU.
Well, with that being said, I just want to wish you a happy World Radio Day.
Yay,
we're going to get to some music by Bia Fiera. And thank you again so much for your contributions.
Thank you.
Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases. From any genre, any day of the week, visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule. Thank you.
Winnipeg, and I'll have some information for you for tomorrow's show. That's your entertainment drop on.
Join the SFU SOCA, Students of Caribbean and African Ancestry, all throughout February for events in celebration of Black History Month. On February 1st, at the sub-social stage, from 3 to 5 p.m., is the kickoff ceremony with a focus theme of African Americans and the arts. On February 9th, games and movie night in the SOCA room in the Student Union Building, room 1430, on the first floor, from 6 to 10 p.m. February 16th, get your groove on with a dance workshop held in subroom 2410, second floor of the Student Union Building, from 6 to 8 p.m. And finally, February 24th, support SOCA in recognition of 30 years with a gala event held in the sub-ballroom, fifth floor of the Student Union Building, from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. For more information, visit the SOCA Instagram at SFUSOCA or drop by their space in the Student Union Building, room 1430.
Join me, Robin, every Friday at noon for Roots and Berries. Tune in to hear bluegrass, old-time music, and other rootsy little nuggets with a focus on Canadian players, singers, and pickers. That's Roots and Berries, Fridays over the noon hour, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Noise of Carpet explores 1990s indie classics, recently exhumed underground gems. Every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 9 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Tune in if you're a slacker, loser, or creep for an hour of positively nostalgic triggers and some new stuff too. On CJSF 90.1 FM or streaming at cjsf.ca.
You are listening.